It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Minutes before Apple's quarterly results come out, we're going to do what we usually do, which is speculate, particularly about Apple Watch sales. How well did they go? We'll find out that and a whole lot more, including a tutorial on Apple Music that actually makes sense. It's all next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Pay as you go and start with 2 terabytes free by going to CashFly.com. Use the promo code Twit. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 464, recorded Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. Hederhosen. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/MacBreak. That's Lynda.com/MacBreak. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to Harry's.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code MACBREAK when you check out. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, and it's going to be Mac Wait Weekly this week as we wait for Apple's quarterly results to come in. I don't know if we can wait long enough. It'll be right after the market closes, which means it'll be right after the show ends. But fortunately, we don't need facts to pontificate. That's why we're here. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, our head pontiff. Good to see you.
I did have like a 9 Hawaiian punches before that, so my energy level is high and my BS level is similarly high.
How'd you like a nice Hawaiian punch? Also, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Welcome back, Leo. I hope you left the place in good enough order for you.
You did, and I want to thank you and Andy both for filling in. And did Jason Snell do one as well?
Yep. Couldn't keep him out, Leo. We tried.
I know. Well, you know, the guy, he lives so nearby. Access. It's hard to keep him out. And also here's Serenity Caldwell from her new podcast studio in beautiful downtown Boston. Hello.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm well. So these are third quarter results, which will be out probably in about 2 or 3 hours. I noticed Apple stock going up over the last few days. What do we expect?
Money. Big gobs of money.
Money.
Is there anything else at this point, Leo? Big gobs of
money. At this point, they could actually have a weak result because they didn't have such a... is the standard now so high that it's going to get more and more difficult to... mostly interested in seeing... I mean, certainly the iPhone's going to do well, and all the analysts say the iPhone will have another up quarter, maybe sales around 49 to 50 million units in 3 months. This is the third quarter, which is not really an important, normally a big quarter, right?
No. I mean, everyone's expecting and anticipating what Apple might say about Apple Watch sales, even though they've previously said that they typically don't break out numbers for a product unless they think that this specific product is going to materially be a big, big hunk of the bottom line. And if they have sold 50 million iPhones, yes, there aren't enough wristwatches they could sell in one quarter to compare with 50 million iPhones.
Everything pales compared to the iPhone.
But it's an opportunity for them to at least make a nod towards, are they selling more than they thought? Are they selling as much as they thought? Are they having, is it a supply issue? So I think everybody's so on tender hooks, or in certain parts of the business press, to finally print the Apple Watch is a flop column. And then now they just want the numbers to back it up, as opposed to, well, I was on the subway and I didn't see anybody wearing an Apple Watch on the subway. And I live in New York, man. If they're not selling it to people in the subway in New York.
It was so stupid. You were gone, Leo, but MarketWatch put up a column where they based it on, they wrote from an analyst called Slice Intelligence. They took some numbers and they said Apple Watch sales have plummeted 90%. And it was a terrible article, not not just because of the numbers, but because this is MarketWatch. It's considered by many people to be an informed source of information for investors. But they didn't point out that it was U.S. only numbers based on online shoppers that used one of three apps that were affiliated with Slice Intelligence that tend to skew towards the affluent early adopters. All information Slice was happy to provide me within 5 minutes of talking to them. But all the headline was 90% drop. All the reblogs of it, all the stories based on it, including in major publications, were 90% drop. And after I spoke to like three or four analysts, they said that's nothing like the numbers that we're projecting. But I think to Andy's point, that's the kind of feeding frenzy we have right now, because it is new. And if you can take a new product and put it in Apple, you know, Apple is doomed narrative, it's really interesting. And then you contrast that with Ben Behrens' report from yesterday, where it has 97% customer satisfaction, the highest ever for a first generation Apple product. And it looks to me like a lot of people are closing their eyes and throwing things at an imaginary dartboard.
Is it this a little bit Apple's fault for being mum on the subject? I mean, it's not, they don't have to tell us how many they've sold, but it would be one way to squash this.
I honestly feel like the Apple Watch right now is very nascent. It is in early adopter stage, and I don't necessarily think that it would either help or hurt Apple to break it out. I think that they're probably, especially when you consider that the Apple Watch is an accessory for the iPhone more than it is its own distinct, you know, solo product. It's hard to justify, you know, we had iPods as a category, but we never had like iPod Touch, iPod Nano, et cetera. And even that has kind of gotten lumped in recent years. I kind of defend their reasoning for it, because you know that if it was anything less than like 20 million units, everybody would be saying failure. And they're still saying failure, but they at least don't have a specific number to point to, being like, oh, this is so much less than the iPhone, forgetting the fact that the iPhone really didn't sell that much in its first year.
Oh, great. Your point, Renee, that MarketWatch didn't fully explain where these numbers came from, but I use Slice, and Slice is probably a more accurate way than a lot of the entrail readings that we get from other analysts, because it measures actual deliveries and so forth.
Sure, but they, again, like, I think it was for MarketWatch especially, it's their job to put those numbers
in context. I agree.
What does that relate to other first generation products? How does that relate to other wear? I mean, that story did not inform me as a reader. That story didn't inform me.
But you're also quoting this Wristly survey, which was of 800 people saying 97% describe themselves as satisfied.
Sure, but you
I don't put, know again, how put valid that is either. All
it,
of this
it's
is
absolutely. It's not. But again, you put it in that context. Like when Ben puts that out there, he says this is the number of people that were surveyed, and this is the percentage that said this or that, and our audience skews towards the non-technical people said this. So you could. I fully believe these numbers might be awesome, but I want the ability to make an informed decision about whether they're awesome or not.
The truth is, we don't know.
And we don't know Apple TV numbers. They've never, like, they've mentioned it on conference calls, but they don't break out Apple TV numbers. And it's also, when Apple has went into the phone market or the tablet market, they had 10 years of competition in those markets. There were 10 years of smartphones, 10 years of tablets. There have not been 10 years of wearables. So Apple sort of feels like this is competitive information still. It's so new, they don't want to give. In some ways, Apple feels like they gave a lot of help to competitors with previous generation products by how open they were, and that maybe it wasn't in their best interest, and it could be better to sort of play it closer. No other company releases numbers for almost anything, so it's an aberration that Apple has been doing it at all.
And I want to be clear. I mean, we report on the business story. This is a business story, Apple's quarterly results, but it isn't our chief interest. Whether the watch sells or doesn't sell is less interesting to me than whether it's good technology, whether it's going to be an innovation that's going to succeed, whether people are going to embrace
it. Makes people's lives better.
If it's, exactly. I'm much more interested in that than how well it sells.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people who are invested in both sides of the equation. A lot of people who they seem to have an emotional investment in the success of the watch or the failure of the watch. And so they're not willing to wait and see and just simply accept that it really is still an evolving product. There was another big piece, I think it was in the New York Times, was it? About talking about how, well, you notice that Facebook has yet to update Messenger for Watch, and these other important apps have not become available for Watch. When it's not real, it's giving people the impression that it's because of a lack of faith in the device from Facebook, when actually Facebook is not really that quick to support new platforms to begin with. And secondly, when you talk to developing houses where they really have a limited number of time and money and resources, this isn't a passion project of any kind. It really is, are we going to add a new part of our business, which is supporting the Apple Watch. most of them that are talking to me about how we know that there's going to be better stuff in the fall. We know that we can either do something that just sort of shows our interest that will ship in August, but whatever real thing we want to build, we won't be able to build it until the fall or even early 2016 ever. So it's not you really have to wait and see how this thing comes out involved. Apple's in the exact same boat as Google, as in Motorola, as with Pebble. This is still a platform where nobody knows what people want. Nobody knows the best way to use it, and nobody knows what's the most effective way to write software for this sort of thing.
Well, I just want to report these scientific results in a survey of our live and studio audience. Fully 50% have Apple Watches.
Yep. I'm making a headline right now. Leo.
Right now. And yep. You have a rubber band. I'm sorry, it's not an Apple Watch. You can pretend all you want. My question is, how many of you are satisfied with your Apple Watch? 4 out of 6. So there was some room for error, apparently, in the scientific survey.
See, that was another number that I wasn't really certain about because
That mean?
We're not talking about people who walked into a Best Buy and walked out, decided, hey, that doesn't that look interesting? I'll buy that. At this point, we're talking about people who were so eager to have Apple Watches that they jumped on the first day of orders and they were okay with like not being able to walk into a store and get it. So maybe they got a sampling of people that were already sort of predisposed to like the watch anyway. I think the real numbers come in October or November when people are just buying it because, you know, this is sort of interesting and hey, I want to get my dad a birthday present anyway, so maybe I'll get one of these, or I got a $100 gift card for Christmas or for my birthday, and I'm going to start to now that this big splash about 2.0 is out there, maybe now is the time for me to buy it.
Just to Andy's larger point, though, again, like when Ben surveyed, he shows what the numbers were for iPhone, for iPad as well. And that's kind of all I'm asking from the media. If you're going to write for the New York Times, you know, it's one of the great newspapers, and you're going to say Facebook doesn't have an Apple Watch app, but you need to point out it took them 18 months to get an iPad app.
Right.
And you have to sort of ask, what is a Facebook app for Apple Watch? Maybe it makes zero sense to have it there. They don't have an app. We never made a deal with Apple to have Facebook on the Apple TV, and maybe they're one of the few companies that could have. Presenting information without a context, sometimes it's just useless, but sometimes it does us a disservice. And I think that if you
welcome
are writing,
to the modern freaking internet, my God.
It's just, but people, like, I get calls from my mom who she sees the stuff on BBC and she's like, oh, is Apple going out of business? And like, it just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Apple, it's all over for Apple. The quarter before they introduced new iPhones, they sold 50 million. It's all over. Forget it.
down
33% from the biggest quarter. I took the watch on the trip because I really wanted to give it, you know, some tasks to do, and it was a good watch. I could tell what time it was. Didn't really do much else for me,
and was usually within 3 or 7 minutes of the correct time, which is really all you want.
Was very accurate. It was Mickey's feet are in synchrony. And there's interest in it. A lot of people asked, is that the Apple Watch? We even had a guide in Germany who was wearing the Apple Watch. And I said, where'd you get that? Because it wasn't out. He said, I had friends in the United States send it to me. And it's the greatest thing ever, especially for my job, because he's walking around as a guide and he doesn't want to be on the phone. So there, and I think really that's where the high satisfaction comes from right now, is people who have a use for it, who have a purpose for it. Particularly like Dr. Mom, who's a doctor who doesn't, he can't be on the phone. But it's useful to get that information. A lot of people like that. It's of real value too. I think super athletes like Adam Engst are less than happy with it. You remember he was on the show and said it didn't do everything his running watch did, and he wished it did. But
I think
average middle of the road athletes, which is, you know, probably the majority, love it.
So. Yeah, I haven't seen one of these devices that all the ones that I've tried so many of them. They're really great as fitness devices. They're almost never great as training devices.
Yeah, they're casual fitness devices.
Kinda. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's especially valuable for people who just want to measure their level of activity relative to what their activity was the day before.
Exactly.
The number of steps relative to the day before, the number of calories they burned relative to the day before. It's the people who are really on a training regimen who really want to know how well am I working these muscles and am I going to get credit for this activity, which isn't being metered very well. And does this work with other devices and other trackers and other sensors that I can have on my body. And so that's really the division as far as I see.
Serena, you still wear yours during training sessions for roller derby?
I do. And I find it, you know, it's gotten a little bit more accurate. I still wish that there was a skating sports option,
right.
But I find it quite valuable.
Okay. And in what way?
In part, it allows me throughout the day to make sure that I'm actually moving because, you know, when you work at home, it's very, very easy to wind up sitting for 7 hours straight. And then you realize you have to go to a roller derby practice, which is very intensive and high, you know, high energy. You're using a lot of your muscles. And if you've just been sitting around all day, it puts you at greater risk of injury. In general, it's a bad thing. So the watch, especially with the stand reminders and just with the daily checks and all of that, it helps me be more active throughout the day so that I feel better when I get to derby practice in the evening. It's also really nice to be able to see exactly how much energy I'm exerting both throughout the day and at practice so that I can hydrate and refuel effectively. Sometimes you don't, you know, I know in my head that I burn, you know, about 1,000 calories doing a roller derby session, but actually seeing the deficit on your wrist and being like, all right, so you've burned through, you know, 3,200 calories today. You should probably eat more than a quesadilla if you want to, you know, feel good the next day.
I guess the real reason this is an interesting story is because it gets tied into, rightly or wrongly, the notion that this is the first post-Steve Jobs product. This is Tim Cook's litmus test. This is Apple, which had an amazing success, an unprecedented success with the iPhone. Unprecedented even for Apple, trying to find a follow-up. And it's more than just an Apple story, because we see this in tech in general. It's always hard to find a follow-up for a massively successful product. And if Apple can do it, that's pretty damn impressive. So I understand the interest in this story. And I do think Apple, completely understandably, fuels it the flames by not giving us any information. Will they tell us something this afternoon? What will they say?
See how happy Tim, we'll get a voice analysis of how happy.
Because that's really, he's going to say something like that, right? We're very happy with the sales.
Yeah.
He's not going to say we sold 25 million.
It was an octave higher than last quarter. He must be really, really happy.
Very, very, very happy.
Yeah, I think he's already spoken about how the only metric he's been talking about so far is that they're already selling way more than they can supply, and I think that his tone of voice was trying to say, hey, look, it's not like we've got back stock that we can't get rid of,
right?
But it also means that if you had more, you would be able to sell more.
Is that still the case, by the way? Are they? I mean, they're now in stores. You can look at them, right?
They're easier to find now. Now that you can go walk into a store and actually walk out with them, I think that if there's anything that you it's sometimes the problem is not the actual execution, but the expectations that you create. In that, remember that in the weeks before the actual launch of the watch, they're saying, now remember, we're going to let people make appointments to come in and try on Apple Watch. Now, we can give you a 10-minute slot if you reserve right now. And it only took about a week for people to, just come on in, and crickets. It's like I was in the Boylston Street Apple Store in Boston, which is, you know, huge foot traffic. I was there, I think, like a few days after the watch was released. I wanted to check out the gold band, and I was thinking that maybe wish I'd made an appointment, but I want to make an appointment for a $10,000 watch. I have no intention of taking a look at. And as soon as I walked in, like, I'm just sort of glancing over. Would you like to see this? Here's a demo. We'd like to see. I can lock this for you. So it's the difference between and that has nothing to do with how successful the watch is, but that's something for someone to take a look at if they are really, really desperate to have an early bead on how well this is or how poorly this is selling. Realize that even if it's the lowest estimate that I've seen that is even remotely credible, from a study that I think is remotely credible, has said 2 million. And if that were true, even if it was the lowest estimate, that would still be about... I think another estimate I saw about the combined wearables was something like 1.2, 1.3 million over the previous year. So they would have sold in about a month and a half double as many smartwatches as had been sold for the previous year from everybody. So that's not something to be worried about.
We also all, I think, agree that the Apple Watch this fall, Watch OS 2, is going to be a major leap forward. And that's when, I'm not judging the watch until I see what happens with that and standalone apps and things like that.
Absolutely.
I do think
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just absolutely agree that 2.0 is going to be a huge shift in terms of usability for the watch.
Yeah.
I can't really speak to the beta right now. But in general, I think that the features that Apple is promising for 2.0 are must-haves for folks. I'm a little bit worried about battery life on the 38 millimeter, as opposed to the 42 when it comes to standalone apps.
Yes. So that's interesting. You wear a 38.
I do wear a 38.
And my wife does, and one of our staffers, one of our editors does, and they all complain of poor battery life. I, with the 42, never had a problem. So
yeah, I don't necessarily think it's poor battery life. I just think it's slightly less wowing battery life.
Well, it's, I mean, it should only be a few percentage points less, right? I mean, it's only a slightly smaller battery.
People who work out and have the 38 that seem to
that's
have the biggest
the,
problem.
That's yeah. Lisa.
Yeah.
So what because when she's using the activity tracker, apparently it just saps the life out of the battery.
It does. Yeah, because rate. The constant heart rate monitoring is going to be a battery drain no matter what you do.
Yeah. I'm sedentary, so I should get 3 or 4 days out of my 42 millimeter.
It should actually go backwards. It should charge.
We should get a credit because we're being sedentary, which means that the battery not only lasts longer, but fewer recharge cycles, which means it goes into the landfill a lot later. We're helping to save the planet by sitting on it or watching BattleBox on the sofa.
It's charging offsets.
I am a carbon offset. What numbers, besides the watch, which everybody's going to be watching with eagle eye, measuring Tim's octave, what other numbers or indicators should we look for? What else?
It'll be interesting to see if there's anything on Apple Music.
Yeah.
Yes. Since it did
kind of early for that, though. Yeah, it's only been out 3 weeks.
I think what we might hear is this many people have tuned in to Beats One, and we're very happy with the launch of our subscription service. And, you know, people are finding it easier. Like, I feel like we'll have some kind of spiel on Apple Music. And there might be, you know, I don't think the problems with Apple Music are widespread enough to warrant any questions from the analysts on, you know, libraries are being screwed up. Because I really think that's a small portion of the overall numbers. But I will think it would be interesting, especially to get sort of their initial read on like, oh, yeah, we have X million people signed up for the free trial. We might hear about that. We might just hear a more broad, Apple Music is doing so incredibly well, and we're so happy with our... Yes, exactly. We're so pleased with...
It's an analyst call. They got to give us something. They got to give us some numbers, right? I mean, they're going to say something.
We'll see.
About music, though. They don't break that
still
out.
Still in the free trial period. We might hear more in the next call a few months. A few months down the line.
You guys, I'm too old, obviously, for Beats One. You guys love Beats One, though, don't you?
I like it. I'm not, I don't tune in 24/7 like, oh, it's a must listen, but I really like Zane Lowe's show. I really like a couple of the independent shows that have been run. There's some music that just doesn't, I just don't go for, but I'm finding a lot of cool new music that I had never heard before as well. So sometimes I give it a shot where I'm like, I'm stuck in the car for an hour and a half, so I'm just going to listen to Beats One. And even if I hear 5 songs that I don't really care for, I might hear 2 or 3 that I really like, and then I can go and find more by that artist. And it's as easy as being like, Siri, play me more by Courtney Barnett. And then all of a sudden I'm listening to an entirely new artist that I've never heard before.
The best case scenario for Beats One, right? Is that it sells records.
Yeah.
Or at least it gets you interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't changed my habits, the Beats One station. I've liked it the times I've listened to it, but it hasn't created the habit of, I want some sound, I don't know what I want, so by default I'll put on Beats One. The thing that's been most helpful to me is occasionally opening up the music app and seeing what it's decided to surface for me on this day in terms of curated playlists, because it's getting better. There's an immense number of holes in its recommendations. I'm not doing a direct side-by-side comparison as I'm testing between the Google Music and Apple Music. I will say that the algorithmic approach of Google means that there is no type of performer, there is no type of music that it doesn't care about. I was so amused by a recommendation it made the other day that I actually had to tweet out a screenshot that it noticed that I had listened to a bunch of Kristen Chenoweth, and so it created Angela Lansbury Radio for me.
Oh Lord! Oh Lord!
No, it's great. She is a goddess. She is the definitive on Mame, okay, she originated the role of Mrs. Lovett on Broadway. For heaven's sake, she is a star. But just the idea that it would
best pies in London. Okay, good. I'm sorry. I'm listening to Beats One right now. Play it for us, would you? There, Jason Kleanthis.
So
every time I tune in, I hear the worst DJs of ever. But I know I haven't heard Zane. So, and they keep interrupting the music, and it feels very old fashioned.
It feels
oddly
BBC One.
It's hard. I know. I was after talking to other people who never got out of the habit of listening to radio. They said, no, that's how radio is now. They'll have like call signs in the middle of the music for a whole bunch of different reasons.
Here's Julie Antonucci. It's
hard to get used to it.
Earlier today on Chart, Brooke Reese and Travis Mills reveal the nominees for this year's MTV Video.
Now, by the way, that's a big scoop. MTV announced its Video Music Award nominees on Beats 1.
It is.
Always on, Leo. Worldwide.
There's the phony baloney musical award show is going to be announced on the phony radio show.
I like all the echo effects. I like the pouch.
Pick up the award for what's the name of the show where she makes a playlist to come and pick up this award.
The mixtape show I've heard is very good.
St. Vincent's mixtape.
Yeah, I've heard that's very good.
It's fantastic.
So great.
But it's hard to find, isn't it? It's like
that's what I find because I tune in at random times, and this is almost always what I get is it's Julie Antonuga. We're in the club. We're listening. I love you guys. My producer Joey's gonna play a tune, and I just it's like I don't want to hear any more of that, so I don't hear anymore.
It illustrates a little bit of a problem because I can't arrange to be somewhere sitting by listening at the right time. And I'm figuring that, well, look, obviously there's a way you can actually play it later on. And I'm not sure if that's true or not because it's really hard to find something I'm deliberately looking for within the app.
It's retro. It's like saying, oh, forget DVRs. Let's all just watch Ed Sullivan at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. It's
watching the Olympics.
It's old fashioned.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like that from a perspective of, it's reinventing radio and it's creating must listen.
Well, Mike Elgin made that point. He said it's brilliant because it's for the first time ever we'll all be listening globally to the same thing at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think that's really cool. But I will say on the flip side, it is a little frustrating not to be able to re-download, especially as a subscriber. It's like, I'd really like to listen to a full show.
They need to tie it in somehow to the modern world. I mean, it's a radio station, and then they have this more modern stuff. And they need to somehow, give us playlists.
Yes, they do.
So you can go back and see that mixtape and download it and listen?
Yeah, so under Connect, and this is actually the only thing that I found really useful with Connect, if you follow the artists that have shows on Beats 1, so namely like Zane Lowe or Juliette Anuga or St. Vincent, and you go to their Connect page, they have playlists, and they'll also occasionally, they'll snip the interview segments out of put it together.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Some DJs are better about this than others. Juliette Anuga is on and off about, whether or not she'll post playlists. I don't think she...
So it's, up to her?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's up to
get her
them
some staff.
Or if they just have interns. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's lazy interns who just aren't publishing
lazy
the shows
interns.
On time.
Here, show my screen, if you would, because this is the, Jason, this is the Connect. You don't have my screen? Is that the problem? Jason Howell taking the couple of weeks off. He's up in the mountains, and Jason Kleanthis has very bravely decided to sit in and run the board. Thank you, Jason. And it's always a little different to do a different show.
Also, very nice for you to change your name to Jason so that we wouldn't...
Yeah, it's very easy to say Jason. All my producers are named Jason now. Even Eileen was named Jason, so... Actually, I called her Elaine for the longest time, so... It's just, when you work for an old man, this is what happens. So, Connect, do you use it? This is interesting. I mean, these are 10 days old, these posts.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, okay, here's... This at the top, Snoop Dogg yesterday, and here's something from Diplo 21 hours ago... Then Dre 3 days ago. Am I doing something wrong? Then U2 6 days ago. This is not exactly a vibrant community.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. So I'm looking at my page. I've got Elton John's Rocket Hour from 29 minutes ago. Zane Lowe from 30 minutes ago.
So there's something I'm doing wrong.
I think it's just the certain folks are publishing fast. I also made the distinct decision to follow channels.
So I need to follow some people then.
Yeah, if you follow curators, which is basically if you go to playlists, is it for you? If you go to
for me?
Yeah, if you go to new, excuse me. If you go to new and then you go down to Apple editors playlists or curators playlists.
Yeah.
You click on one of those.
Okay, okay, good. So now I could go to the mixtape. No, I can't.
Yes. Well, you choose one of those. That's, did you click on the curators?
All curators.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dancing astronaut. No, I don't even see Zane Lowe here.
Yeah. So curators, these are the magazines that are doing that. So if you click onto them, so like click on Wired, for instance.
Okay.
You have an option to then follow Wired.
Connect.
And then Wired shows up in your Connect. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then follow. So now I'm going to see them.
Exactly.
So I'm just not following anybody. But the last time Wired posted, 1 month ago.
Yeah. Wired was a launch partner in... They kind of give up.
That was a very clean and great explanation. But I was reliving every time, like in the 1990s, when I would be on the phone explaining to my dad how to make Windows recognize a printer.
Yeah,
I really wish that the music app
you and press the, record and on the desktop the and on mobile time,
were
dad.
Easier.
Last
to
time
use.
Mojo Magazine posted 23 days ago. Last time, Downbeat Magazine. Okay, Jazz, love Jazz. Let's see when they posted last on Connect. Because I love Jet, 21 days ago. So this is not a, again, I'm going to reiterate, this is not a vital.
I'm changing my habits, that's the problem.
Yeah. I would go directly to the Apple Editors playlist.
Okay, good.
Because I honestly think.
They're doing it.
That curated, yeah, well, exactly. That's their job. They're doing this every day. And those are also the playlists that you see in For You.
Right.
So if you like a certain, like, for instance, when I was listening to Beats,
that.
There were a couple of editors who I knew I loved their playlists.
Right.
So the same thing with the Apple Editors playlist. You go in, you find a genre that you really like. For instance, like there's classic rock. So you go, I'm going to listen to classic rock. And you follow them. They post all the time. You know,
good. I'm going to follow them. There we go.
They posted 20 hours ago.
Yeah, yeah. Two days ago, three days ago. So they're doing a daily post.
Every day. Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
You can see that. I mean, I think that you and I now are only the only two people who know how to use this. I mean, you can see that it's not...
Oh, it's insane. It's very hard to use for the random person who just kind of throws it out there.
It's impenetrable.
And yeah, it is. And it's frustrating to me. I'm putting together these troubleshooting guides for Apple Music right now.
Oh, well, no wonder. And, so you're the expert. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I've spent a while digging around the service, but it's crazy to me. You know, you go to Apple's support documents, and a lot of their support documents were written after the launch or are very sort of broad and overarching without any specifics of like, it's like how to Connect FAQs tell you how to post on Connect. They don't actually tell you how to use Connect.
Right.
So.
And then you can actually write from Connect, click a play button and listen to stuff.
You can, yes. Yeah,
that's nice. So I can say, okay, good. Oh, that's good. Well, you know, now that I know how to use it, I might actually use it more. I mean, I think this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat once you know how to use it and once you figure out how to add people. It's just very impenetrable on how to actually explain it.
Yeah.
And the same thing, the radio, you can follow all of the artists. But the problem with iTunes is that iTunes doesn't have the schedule list of shows on your iPhone.
Yeah, I don't know when. I want to listen to Susie Mixtape or whatever it is, but I don't know how or when.
Yeah, if you click on the big Beats 1 thing in iTunes, that will just play Beats 1. If you click on it on your iPhone, that shows you the list of schedules.
Oh,
and it also, if you keep on scrolling down, it shows you all of the people. So you can follow all of the artists. And I have no idea why that isn't implemented on the Mac. It seems so silly to me.
Because reasons.
Yeah, but if you search, like if you go into the search bar and search Zane Lowe or search Elton John's Rocket Hour or
maybe
search Saint Vincent.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Type in St. Vincent, and you'll be able to get her Connect page.
Oh, good. All right. That's a person, St. Vincent?
I forget what her actual
name
is.
Okay, so he's now a curator. So now, that was the key, is search for the person.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, or you search for, like, the
I mean, I might use this more. Mixtape delivery service. Mm-hmm. Here we go. A ferocious live performer. Oh, she's a performer, not just a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
She's a electronic artist.
Neat. Is it? And it's not just her music or even her style of music. It's a mix.
No, the mixtapes are designed specifically for certain people, which I think is kind of awesome.
Yeah. Right. That's neat. Okay. See, now in 10 minutes, we've made, I think, for me anyway, Apple Music 10 times better.
Awesome.
But how do you get people to do that? I mean, that's good. Well, if you watch Mac Break Weekly,
you read
you just
all
got
Serenity stuff.
And you read Serenity's columns at imore.com.
Basically.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. Serenity Caldwell, the expert in Apple Music, is here. Do you listen all day?
I try to. I haven't been able to today because it's been down. The service
was down this morning, wasn't it? As were other Apple services.
They've been having a little bit of problems.
Oops. You know, you think everybody tuned in to hear the MTV nominations for the video awards, and it just brought the service just to its knees.
Destroyed them.
That's why you could not get a cab. You couldn't get a burrito. Or everyone was just tuned in to Beats 1. They want to know who gets the V. Is this Weird Al's year for the VH1s or whatever? I don't know.
It was like World Cup of Heathrow.
Made up award for made up things.
Hey, Miley Cyrus is hosting it. I know that much.
Not as bad as the ESPYs, I know. You know.
Oh,
and
look.
Now the Awardy Awards, an award for people who have won awards last year and whose deeds have already been awarded.
You know where Apple Beats Music's best directory is? Somebody just said it to me in the chat room. On Tumblr.
Yeah. A lot of people are doing that. A lot of people are capturing like the shows that people want to listen to and posting them elsewhere.
But this is the official. This is the official Tumblr.
Oh, yeah. Well, but
yep, they have Apple. I think
this is better than anything else. This is Tumblr.
Yep.
I guess Apple
and that
doesn't.
Shows the upcoming schedule.
Yeah. Look at that. So now I know how to do that. This is awesome. Fantastic.
There's also one that I think it's Beats One Plays on Twitter, records and
yeah, I subscribe
shows every
to that.
Single. Yeah, every single song yeah. that's on Beats One.
I followed,
really helpful.
I followed that. People are mad at me saying, well, you just don't put any effort in.
No, it's the job of the company to put the effort
in. It's not my job to put effort into understanding Apple Music. Exactly. It's their job. Make it discoverable. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. You know what, Lynda? Could you make an instructional video on how to use Apple Music? I would be very interested. They do have 3,000 on-demand video courses. They'll show you how to make music. They'll show you how to write apps. They'll show you how to use Excel and Windows. They'll show you everything you need to know, whether you're a problem solver, you need to know it for business, or maybe you're just curious and you like to learn, or you want to make something happen. Lynda.com has a course for you, everything you need to feed your curious mind. I'm actually, my next course is going to be up and running with Node.js because our new website's written in Node.js and I want to understand it better so I can play with it. Building, you don't need to, just me. Building data-driven apps with iOS SDK and SQLite. There's also a fantastic multi-course series. I've mentioned it before, the Code Clinic. Have you seen the Code Clinic? If you're into Mac stuff, this is a great place to go. If you want to write apps, it's a great place to go. The Code Clinic is kind of my idea of, like, fun. Experts take common code challenges and then code it in a variety of languages. C++, C#, Java, PHP, Python, Ruby. They've just added Swift, which is cool. JavaScript, C, plain old C, and R, which is a very hot new language. They just released a new look at the features of Office for Mac 2016. Did that come out while I was gone?
Yep.
See? I got to go to lynda.com, take some training. 10 days free, the run of the place when you go to lynda.com/MacBreak, lynda.com/MacBreak. And yes, you can get desktop, mobile, and tablet access with their apps. They've got it down. They really know what they're doing. lynda.com/MacBreak. 10 days free at lynda.com. I think the iTunes store is still down. It's been connecting this whole time. I was using it. And now it's this.
I checked that out when I first heard about that. And it was working fine. At least I was able to stream
it must be
the new CeeLo tribute to Robin Williams, at least.
Ella. Really? Oh, I'd like to hear that.
It's nice.
I bookmarked that.
Yeah.
All right. Enough. We'll move on. But thank you for that tutorial. That was actually really great. Because
no
I'm
problem.
Too lazy to figure it out myself. Yeah. Angela Arendt, who is not, I foolishly thought she was the chancellor of Germany. But no, that's somebody else. She is, in fact, more important and makes a lot more money. She's in charge of retail at Apple. And she says, we will have a back to school thing. And I'll tell you next week. Okay.
It's all about getting the video subscribers, Leo.
I'm sure many of you are thinking, does she release a video, a message every week?
For the retail online store team,
not
yeah.
for public.
No.
So she says in her last week's, I'm sure many of you are thinking also, But is there anything else for back to school? Well, I need you to wait until next week's video. Oh, she's learning. She's teasing like a pro. And I'll share a little more insight with you then. Okay. These
you're
get leaked out of
me. You're supposed to tease the users. Don't tease the people that you're supposed to be working with.
Why not?
She's in a contest with Jay Blahnik. Whoever can get the most. No. That's not true.
That's a good
rumor. It's all about the Google Sense ad clicks for these videos.
It's a good rumor.
She's going to do the cinnamon challenge on the next one.
Food.
The Apple Car rumor persists.
Waste.
Is it a waste of time to even talk about this?
No, I mean, it's what they're working. It's the same thing about talking about the watch four years ago.
Right.
It's a product that they're exploring, and they got a lot of people working on it, and we have no idea what it's going to ultimately end up looking like yet.
Wall Street Journal says that they've just hired a auto industry veteran from Fiat, Doug Betts. He led global quality at Fiat. But you know what? Well, A, that's not a really good recommendation. But B, it may not be cars. He could just be, you know, he's an expert in global quality.
In manufacturing,
yeah. In manufacturing.
But assuring it.
Could be QC on computers. Doesn't have to be cars.
But the interesting thing when you notice is that they're not getting a lot of people who are on their way up in the auto industry. They're getting people to leave really great jobs to take jobs at Apple. And so that would at least indicate that this isn't something that, well, you know, we try a whole bunch of things. We tried a square iPad and we've tried a Mac with a touchscreen. This is it's hard to get someone to leave a really great career if on something that Apple is just sort of thinking about. So it leaves me with the impression that Apple really, really does intend to actually put something on the road. But whether they can actually pull it off remains to be seen. It did make me think, though, that this is one product that's maybe kind of perfect for Apple in that they don't have to build a Toyota. They don't. If they sell 10,000, 20,000 of these, that can amount to a success. And it is something that they can target people who are specifically looking for something that is elegant, that is well designed, that has a certain luxury, phony baloney cachet about it. If they want to take advantage of that as well, Tesla did brilliant stuff because they couldn't. In the early days, of course, they couldn't build a $20,000 or $30,000 car. They couldn't even build a car that would meet the conventional definition of an automobile given range. But what they could do is if they built it in a luxury frame and they made it something that is hard to obtain and very exclusive. And something that would only appeal to people who are very much interested in whatever the next wave is, they got all those people to pay $80,000 to $110,000 for the car that then allowed them to then build the $30,000 or $40,000 car a few years later. So this it's even better than the watch, it seems. This could be like a perfect Apple product.
Interesting. Webster in our chat room points out that Fiat owns Ferrari and Eddie Q is on the Ferrari board.
It's Kevin Bacon there somewhere.
But those things can be problematic, too, because if you're on a board and you poach an employee from that
Tim
company.
Tim Cook was on the Nike board, and they still made watches.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the interesting thing to me here is...
You're not going to let Apple executives on your board if all they do is use it to do...
Eric Schmidt's move. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, exactly. You could argue that it's Eric Schmidt.
But the thing that's interesting to me about this is that Apple can make a beautiful car. Like Apple is just a great industrial design company and they can hire a lot of people to make a beautiful car. But the thing that interests me about Apple is that they're not just a manufacturer. They do integrated products from the chipset on up. And I think like things like the software story and the services story are going to be, you barely think about software on cars. Maybe you look at the big Tesla screen and you wonder why you have Daring Fireball at 17 inches on your dashboard. But I think maybe Apple thinks is a real opportunity to solve cars from an interface perspective. And you often heard Steve Jobs' time, you know, cracking the interface for the TV and various products like that. And the Apple Watch is beautiful, but it's ultimately the software on that we experience. And I think just based on rough rumors of who's working on this kind of stuff, they have a lot of really, really smart people beyond the atoms and on the bits on these projects. And to kind of sort of get an idea of what Apple thinks a car should be running, not necessarily how it runs, but what software it runs on that, I think that's going to be an extremely interesting thing to see.
Yeah. My problem is that I'm not being negative about the prospects. I'm saying that when you look at the ball of hardware and software that Apple puts together, an outsider could come to the conclusion that you could see the stuff that Apple really philosophically cares a lot about and the stuff that it only cares, they only care about in so much as it helps them to sell the things that they do care about. iCloud is case in point, and most of the services they do, other case in point, where you don't get the impression that if someone from any iCloud division or any of the app divisions storms in and says, you know what, yeah, the iPhone does not support Pages well enough, and we need the iPhone to do this, they would just be, they'd be handed a coupon for free lunch somewhere off campus, and that would be about it. So the thing that I find, I think that would be interesting to look at the Apple car is that what parts did they put a high priority on? What parts did they not put a high priority on? I think that software, there isn't a whole lot you can do to really fix interface. We're talking about integration between systems inside a car, and the cars are getting a lot more like the space shuttle every single day. I don't think they could improve the center dash any better. I don't think that they could do a whole lot to figure out how to make sure that the air conditioning comes on at the right time, or how to monitor the cooling system any better. What would be more interesting is if they decide to say, well, what if there are 40 Apple cars in a neighborhood? Is there a way to get them to talk to each other so that each one of them drives better and handles and responds to road situations better that are common to that part of the country, or even that part of town, or even this specific part of day? It really is like you're trying to build a whole planet here, and so it's a lot more, it's a more interesting challenge for them than just building a watch or just building a phone.
Absolutely. And also, did you see the article on Wired today or yesterday about the car hacking?
Yeah.
Well, that's something where I'm like, oh, this is Apple's wheelhouse, right? What has Apple been campaigning about for the last year and a half, which is even before that, a security? And that's an area where I'm sure Tesla's thought about it a bit more than, say, Jeep or Toyota. But that's a place where Apple can really innovate. And if the car, you know, the places for the innovations for the car are really in the software, are how it connects to other cars, how it can do some autonomous driving without necessarily freaking everybody out and being like, Skynet is here. And how it can securely protect your data and protect you from being hijacked in your car. That's not necessarily a, that's not something that's happened yet on a wide scale other than proof of concepts. But I can very quickly see that becoming an issue if security loopholes don't get shut down and fast.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that particular loophole on Security Now. Well, I'm sure talk about it some more after the show when Security Now starts in about an hour. But the issue really is that car manufacturers didn't pay enough attention to security. They used an insecure bus. They will now going forward. But maybe now as a car becomes more and more software-driven device, maybe it is appropriate for Apple to get into it. And I think Apple has the same problem Google and Microsoft and every other big tech giant have, which is what's next? And Apple's going to do as much. It has the budget. It has plenty of cash. It doesn't spend a lot in R&D. In fact, we were talking about what numbers to watch for in their quarterly result. I'm interested in their R&D budget and whether that's going to start going up.
I think it has been.
Because Google, of course, is, you know, Google's doing the same thing. Google's saying, what's next? How do we, you know, because our business is going to go away in X number of years, 10 years or whatever, and we better have another plan. The iPhone is not going to be the driver forever. They've got to have another plan, as every company has to. And Apple's putting money into a variety of things. You've made good cases, all three of you, for why cars might make sense. But there are other areas as well. Cars seems a bit of a stretch for me, but
it's interesting. I mean, I'm in a situation where I have a quite beloved high mileage car that runs perfectly. It breaks maybe twice a year, and it's just the reason why I'm keeping it is not out of nostalgia, is because the darn thing keeps running. And it failed the inspection last week. All because of there's like one part of the suspension that needs to be replaced. And it's not a really expensive part, but it's hard to find on an older car. So I'm spending a few weeks without like having a daily driver car while I either source this part or figure out if it's time to buy another car. And I'm surprised to find out how easily I can do without it. Thanks to it's a reminder that, Andy, the grocery store is 3/4 mile away. You can walk to the grocery store. You can walk to the coffee shop. That's fine. Uber can get me for like short hauls, and it doesn't cost that much money. I've had a Zipcar card for a few years now. And when it's time, there's like a family barbecue, like an hour and a half drive away, I can just grab a Zipcar for that. And it's reminding me that this idea that I need to own a car that's, in my case, stays in the driveway 3 days, three entire days where it does not move out of the driveway. Maybe that in itself is an old, outdated concept. So maybe one of the things that Apple and Google can do, and other companies are working on self-driving car technology, is to basically create a new transportation system that is a, like a combination of Zipcar and Uber, where at some point I take them at my phone and say, I need to get from my house to the Amtrak station, and then a pilotless car arrives in my driveway. I think that
makes more sense. You don't want to get into the car business. Because the car business is going to be challenged going forward.
Yeah. I mean, just a day where it's not automatically that you will own a car. You can actually decide that, you know what, I don't need to own this movie. I just want to use it for the 4 hours that I want to watch this TV series. And then it's okay if I don't actually have the DVDs.
I think if you, I mean, that's why Google's not going into the car business. Google's investigating the autonomous car business.
Yeah.
And apparently Apple's project, according to the journal, is an electric car called Titan. The Titan project, yeah. But I think it's just as foolish to assume that Apple's going to make a car as any of the other speculation. You always point out, Renee, Apple's working on a lot of things. Doesn't mean that's a product that they're going to do. Foolish not.
There's a lot of wood behind this arrow, though, right now, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, hiring this Fiat guy is kind of interesting, So we'll watch that. You know, one thing Horace Dediu has said many times now is he's pointed out the increased capital expenditure Apple's been making on property and manufacturing and so forth. Be interesting to see what changes are there as well this quarter.
If they're involved in a new season of Top Gear, I'm going to say that that's a hint.
That would be a giveaway. Apple's quarterly results come out when the market closes, we expect, probably 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Just a couple of hours from now, probably after the show's over. Although occasionally we get, the first press releases.
I think it's like 1:30 the press release hits.
Yeah, we might get it in time.
And all the new betas came out while we were talking, Leo.
Beta four
for iOS, for OS, for watchOS, and for OS 10.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Good, good, good. They're busy.
So busy.
Now, if you upgraded to iOS 9 and you're saying, whoops, Renee's got a good article on how to go back, you can go back, which is nice.
Yeah, they actually made it a point to it's not the easiest thing in the world. And it's not difficult. It's just onerous. You've got to back up before you upgrade, and then you've got to basically wipe it out, revert to the old version of the OS. But they made it possible for OS 10 and for iOS. For watchOS, if you're a developer, Apple has to do the rollback for you. But for either of the other two products, you can do it yourself.
That's good. Should we partake of the public beta? I did last time. I've decided not to this time.
I just warn people, and we talked about this while you were away, but the thing is that you never know what the next... So even if you ask me and you say, is this beta great? I could say it's fabulous. It's better than production. The next one might totally hose your device.
Right.
So it's not something that if you need that, if you depend on it for communicating with your family, for calling for emergencies, for your work, it's not something you want to mess around with.
Yeah, that's what I've been telling people who are challenging me on Twitter about this. I'm saying that even though you're having a great time with it, I have it on an iPad Air 2, and it's very, very stable. But like on a phone, when your car breaks down at the side of I-93 at 2 a.m. on a weeknight, do you want to know that your phone is going to work, or do you want to be pretty sure that your phone is going to work? And that's the difference between a beta and a shipping version.
Yeah. Anything new that you want to report in the new betas, or it's probably too early?
Home sharing is back for music, just like Eddie Q said it would be.
Okay. That is how we do the family thing on music, right?
Home sharing is if you have a computer and you want that music to be available to stream to your own devices.
Family sharing.
So if you have a bunch
sharing.
Of stuff in your iTunes. Yeah, family share. There's a lot of legacy products like iTunes Match versus Apple Music and home sharing versus family sharing. And they have very similar names. So it has been a little confusing. But home sharing is sort of the older product. I think it came out with iOS 5.
Right.
That just lets you stream your stuff to your devices.
Yeah.
Family sharing.
But family sharing is how you do the family plan on music. Yeah. Anybody done that yet?
Yep, I have.
How's it work?
There's an imaginary child to prove it.
I do have an imaginary child I can't delete. It actually, when you figure out how to set it up, which again, Apple doesn't have a support document telling you how to set up family sharing, so I had to invent my own way of doing it. Once you figure out how it works, it actually works quite seamlessly. I actually just did another family sharing test yesterday. But It's just a couple of little things. Basically, the trick is the organizer of the account, the person who's going to be the head of the family, needs to set up family sharing first.
Yes.
Then they need to sign up for a family trial or an individual trial and switch to a family trial.
Well, wait a minute. I'm on the family trial, but I didn't set it up. So that means I can't go back?
No, you can. Oh. You can. It's just it's sometimes buggy if you set up the Apple Music trial first.
So do the family sharing first.
Exactly. If you've already set up a family trial, then you turn on family sharing. Yeah. Make sure everybody is connected to family sharing.
Yeah.
And then make sure that your other members of your family have not yet signed up for Apple Music trials. If they If they have, they're just going to have a 3-month free trial, and then you can convert them over to a family sharing account at the end of that period. But there's no way to put them on your account once they've already started a free trial. Then it's their account for 3 months. However, in the tests that I did yesterday, it appears that you shouldn't lose your music switching from your own individual trial to a family account. It looks like it maintains like who you are and that connected to your iCloud address. I can't 110% confirm that because I only did a couple tests yesterday, but I'm pretty sure.
You're writing an article, I presume.
I am. I've written a couple, and then I'm writing a couple more on how to switch accounts. So if you started as an individual and you want to jump onto a family plan, or if you started as a family plan and you want to turn back to an individual, or if you want to add people, I'm going down the rabbit hole here.
Yeah. And to just further confuse you, you will not find any of this in the sharing system preference pane.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with that. Okay.
Can I just say that this is why I love iMore.
It's like, so good.
It is. I'm not joking. Last week I was actually like finding in one of these contemplative moods. I was just thinking, what if Apple were to simply write a huge check for iMore and just simply say, we want to buy you
our documentation guys.
We will pay your people handsomely whatever you want. Yeah. And in terms of access internally, we will give it to you. It's your job to simply write every single how-to guide you think that we are not seeing on the Apple site. That is the benefit of having iMore in this world. If you don't know how something works in an Apple product, and that is unfortunately becoming more and more of a problem, you go to iMore and there's going to be a guide, as likely as not written by Serenity, that will say, no, here's how it works.
Was that a conscious decision to kind of pursue that, Renee, at some point?
Yes and no. We talked about this before. We believe that we offer a service and we want to delight our readers. And increasingly, it was apparent to us that they had stress or anxiety or just problems, and that if we could solve that for them, there was tremendous value in it. And there's all sorts of value you can derive. Like, some people like hearing rumors. Some people like reading reviews. And we just wanted to make sure that if you ever went to iMore, it wasn't the same site as any other Apple store. And it just seemed like a confluence of sort of good things that we could do.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and somebody needs to do it. Yeah. I'm glad you guys... pursued that. It's a good beat.
I'm putting my my old Apple Store training to use, basically.
Were you a genius?
I was a creative. So essentially, I helped people solve these kinds of problems, except I was sitting next to their Mac and talking them through it at Apple Store.
Perfect, training for this. You know what people do, like me.
Happiest thing for me is that we hit 10 million readers last month. So nice. We weren't sure that it would work. Ooh. And so far it's working really well.
Congratulations.
So we're all super happy. Thank you.
Congratulations. Well, Nilay Patel says that the mobile web is crap. So I'm going to ask you about that in just a little bit. And we'll continue. We'll continue with Teach Leo How to Use a Macintosh in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about shaving. We all got to do it. And if you're going to do it, you might as well do it with the best razors you can get. Nice thing is, they don't have to cost more. In fact, they cost a lot less from Harry's, because Harry's sells direct to you. That's really the key to the whole thing. When the guys who started Harry's first thought about it, they said, you know what would be great? It's one of those conversations, late night conversations. You know what would be cool? If we actually made our own blades. How could you do that, man? I don't know. Let's find out who makes the best blades. They found out. The Fine Technic Company in Germany, they bought the factory. 400 German engineers, designers, craftsmen, and production workers are making your blades. And Harry's sells them direct to you. So you get those blades for about half what you'd pay on a drugstore blade that's not even as good. I love Harry's. You will, too. Make shaving fun again. Go to harrys.com right now. Start by picking a Harry's kit, a Truman or a Winston. In each kit, you get the razor, of course, the handle that looks, and then the blades. The handle looks and feels great. Then three razor blades and your choice of foaming shave gel or the cream. I think I've learned that people want this foaming shave gel. I happen to like the cream. The Winston set's $25. The Truman set's $15. They now have that great Harry's razor stand. And then you sign up for a shave plan so that you get resupplied as often as you need to be at an affordable price. Really affordable. Great blades, great price. I just love Harry's. They have a new aftershave moisturizer, too, that is, smells so good and makes you feel soft and smooth. Get the shave cream, the foaming shave gel, the aftershave moisturizer. But start it all with a kit at a very affordable price. And to make it even better, I mean, you can get the Truman set for $10 if you go to harrys.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. $5 off your first purchase. H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK on checkout. You'll get $5 off. And now you're getting started with the best way to shave to start your day, harrys.com. I started today with Harry's. Lisa and I both have our Harry's. We got a monogram. The Winston, you can get a monogram so that I don't use hers and she doesn't use mine. It's very nice.
Standing.
And we have like 8,000 blades because we both mistakenly signed up for the shave plan. And we didn't realize for a few months that we were getting double deliveries. That's okay. You know what? It was great. Because the truth is, I like having extra blades because then I just change the blade more often. You know, you're supposed to change it about once a week. But if you've got a lot of blades, anytime you feel, you know, I want a nice shave today. I want to be, like I did that today.
You change blades with every cheek, Leo. It's amazing.
You could. You could. All right. So a lot of it. Oh, here's my my Google Fi kit. I'm sorry. I'll keep going. We'll keep talking. I'll just be.
Unboxing.
Well, unboxing my Google Fi kit. I finally got it.
Is this the web stuff, Leo?
No. Project Fi is Google's phone company.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the next topic.
You guys can't. Yeah, the next topic is Nilay Patel's article, which really, after you read it, is not all about the mobile web. It's how bad Safari is on the iPhone.
It's the end of a ridiculous chain that started while you were away. There was an article written that said Safari was a new Internet Explorer. And
the
article.
I do remember that.
So the article, one of the biggest problems we have on the internet now is people have access to instant publishing with the lack of perspective taking. So from a Google or a Mozilla point of view, that might be true. Maybe Apple is too slow for them, or maybe Apple's focus on security or on front-facing customer needs is not the focus that they would like, which is on web standards. But that's why we have multiple browser vendors, because we can have Apple's point of view on a browser and Google's point of view, and they could be equally valid for very different reasons and better suit very different people, developers, customers, different kinds of customers. But the problem arises when you mix a sensational headline with a very strongly stated and ill-informed opinion, and then the internet sort of goes crazy on it.
That's Nilay's specialty, and I love Nilay Patel, by the way. But that's kind of his specialty.
That was a horrible article written as a series of chains of horrible articles because you can say certain things. You can say, I don't like Safari. It's not my favorite browser. I wish that it did this or that better. But when you start saying things, which what the previous article did and what Nilay did about like Apple doesn't care about performance, you can't say things like that. Their entire culture is based on performance. They start at zero regression. They will check your code out if it degrades performance. I don't know how culturally sensitive this, but they turn performance a jihad within that group. It is something that they care desperately about. You have a lot of really good, really smart engineers who happen to have different priorities than you. And making personal assessments about whether they care or not about their own product, I think, goes beyond the pale of even a ranty editorial or a tantrum, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The best thing for me, though, is we had Don Melton on the Debug Show. It went live 2 days ago because he started Safari and WebKit at Apple, and we were eager to hear his point of view on the way that Apple works. Because it was the best intro to a podcast I've ever heard, because he started off saying. At the end of the article, it said that if they're wrong about it, Apple should just come up to them, pull off their glove, and slap them. And Apple can't do that, but expletive, I can. And then he explained exactly what Apple's priorities are: battery performance, battery, like all the things that Apple deeply, truly cares about, and why they didn't enable WebGL to begin with, for example. They were very slow, but when they implemented it, it was secure down to the driver stack. And a lot of the things like service workers, things that provide persistent background access and push notifications and databases, these things in good hands can do marvelous native-like things. In bad hands, could turn your phone into a bot network. So they're incredibly slow and careful about implementing those. But again, that's a point of view. That's not something that should be trivialized or insulted, I think, in a public meeting. Sorry, it annoyed me last week.
Well, it annoyed me a little bit because it also implied that the only way people use the mobile web is Safari on an iPhone, which is patently not.
He doesn't like Android either, but like again, it's insulting. It's not practical. It's not like I ran these benchmarks and the performance was lower than this. Or
what about his larger point, which I don't think is poorly taken, which is that publishers, as a result, and I ask you this as a publisher. As a result, have moved to their own apps because they just don't want their readers to come to them on a mobile browser.
There was a whole other thing that happened at the same time, which is Apple's content blockers. And someone ran a test, and they used iMore as the example. If you content block the JavaScript, which includes the trackers and the ad servers, and that snowballed into John Gruber writing about it on Daring Fireball. And he looked at iMore, and my response to that article was 500 words, but it was immensely large in terms of a content delivery. And then I had to write an article sort of explaining to people about the big ad servers that we use. There's very few options when you have a website of any scale.
No, we do the same thing. You have to do it. That's right.
And they're basically black boxes. They give us a snippet of code. We put that in. We have no ability to pre-screen ads. We can only complain about. And then Ben Thompson wrote a really good article about the details of how this works.
He really kind of said it right, I thought.
Yeah. So it's a matter of perspective. You can just say this is crappy, but the alternative is this not existing. And I think it's worth a larger discussion. And as a poet, we have an app that we provide as well. Facebook is doing instant articles that they barely update. Apple's going to do news, which hasn't launched yet.
Well, that was Neil's other point was, yeah, there's Apple News and there's this new Facebook thing, but nobody's doing app stuff for it because it's so hard to do. It's a lot. It's a massive production.
What's
great about the web is it's easy to produce content. That was what his point, and I think that's well taken.
It's just super hard to monetize it.
Yeah,
yeah, and that gets in the way because if you take off all the JavaScript, these sites are phenomenal. They're amazing sites. There are things like some of the New York Times articles are gorgeous. Some of the stuff that a lot of companies do is fantastic. It's just when you try, nobody wants to pay for anything, and the ad companies are willing to pay for it, and that unfortunately hurts performance and experience.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I'm not a website publisher, although, you know, we spend a lot of money on a new website, but we realize that most of our listeners use apps. That's how they're going to come to us probably in most cases. I don't know. I feel like I can be agnostic in this.
It's part of the argument that some web publishers don't want to have to make apps. And if Apple and other companies provided things like service workers that would allow notifications straight off of Safari or straight off of Chrome, they feel like that was one of the biggest needs of making an app, was to have instant notification access. But the other point of view is we're working on it, but if we give it to you instantly, all these bad things will happen. So, you know, there's a lot of competing interests.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said battery life, because Android does do that. But the Android battery life is pathetic compared to Apple's battery life. And Apple's running less battery. And I mean, Apple really has done it right. They've paid attention to that kind of thing.
And Don was very clear on the show. He said, like, when you look at Safari's performance on the Mac, they are not using any private APIs. They're using all the public stuff that's available to any vendor. And if you measure their performance, I forget who did the test, but someone did a test on spinning, and the CPU rate for Firefox was 25%, for Chrome was 32%, for Safari was 0%. And that's something they desperately care about at Apple.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think Neil's overall point is wrong, which is that... We need better mobile web experience so that we don't have to all write apps, right or no?
I think so, but the difficulty is that when you see how much of the web is now being delivered by iOS devices, that puts a great amount of power into this one app, and so Apple needs to have create safe, secure, and stable software for its users, but if they decide to withhold support of a certain standard just because they want to get it right, that means that so many of these browsers aren't going to have it. So that factors into it a little bit. I wish that there would be a day when I don't have to have three browsers on my desktop at all times. Even on my MacBook, my primary browser is Chrome, simply because it's actually more stable for me than Safari. I don't want to have to always be saying, I can load this page for you, but to do so, I have to reload the code for these five pages. We'd like to do that now. It's every one of these browsers, Tor, Chrome, and Safari, is for a specific purpose, and I'm yearning for the day when I just need one of them.
I agree. And was it you, Renee, who told me that you got to use Safari on the MacBook because Chrome is such a battery hog? Somebody told me that.
Yeah, no. If you look at the battery shaming on OS X, you can see the amount of the performance hit you take from running OS X. I think Ars Technica ran the actual numbers, and it was significant in the double digit percentages. So I don't have Chrome on the MacBook, but increasingly I used to use Chrome just to run Flash, and I don't want to do that anymore. So my use cases for it are rapidly diminishing.
Yeah. Also, everybody's use is different. I mean, you definitely take a battery hit by running Chrome on a MacBook, but it is my default browser on the MacBook because it doesn't kill the battery. It just is more wasteful than Safari is. And for me, in terms of how much time will I use in Safari and all the times I might have to quit and restart it, or all the time I might need to reload browser tabs versus the maybe 45 minutes of battery life I will lose if I'm running a long, long day on Chrome, it's a trade-off. Everybody has their own priorities, and everybody's willing to sacrifice one thing to get this other thing.
So another thing happened while I was gone that kind of was, if you had asked me before I left, I would have put it at the very bottom of the list of possibilities. Apple released a new iPod.
Ooh.
And Renee, you got them all, right?
Yeah.
It's a little baffling to me. There's a new iPod Touch. The Shuffle isn't really updated, right? And the Nano's not
really
updated.
The Nano and the Shuffle are color, yeah.
So the only thing to talk about is that the iPod Touch now is really almost on a par with the iPhone 6. It has the same A8 processor, although underclocked.
Yeah.
It has the same – is it the same camera? It's 8 megapixels.
It's the same camera as the iPod – as the iPad Air 2.
Air 2. 128 gigabytes the maximum. Of course, at a steep price, $400 for the top of the line. And it's in gold. But why
hot pink,
is the question. I just – the only thing I could think of – because first of all – we've all got phones, so the market for iPods really is somebody who doesn't have a smartphone, which, as far as I can tell, is somebody who's under 13, basically. So it seems to me that this is at least the touch, a product for kids to use Apple Music. Is there any other reason why Apple would release this?
Developers who want to test betas or applications, not use their primary devices. People who want a remote control around the house for all the HomeKit or other connected devices that doesn't have their personal data, and they don't mind if anyone in the family or visitors use it. For people who want to turn off notifications and just game without worrying that it's going to turn into a phone call while at the TARDIS level.
That's a high price to pay, though, to not have notifications.
The most impressive thing about this, and actually, you know, I'd love to hear Serenity's point on it too, because we were talking about it last week, is that it just clears, it gets rid of a lot of the 32-bit A5 cruft that
it's a 64-bit processor.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It does. And I mean, I am all for unifying the devices. It's been a long, hard road for developers trying to different screen sizes and Retina and non-Retina.
Yeah, but why now?
32 versus 64.
They haven't updated it in 3 years.
Well, I honestly think that in part you need new iPods to come out with a new version of iTunes and Apple Music. Although it baffles me that nothing but the iPod Touch can play Apple Music FairPlay DRM tracks. People don't seem to remember that the iPod could play FairPlay tracks from the very beginning, because for a long time the iTunes store was DRM encrypted.
Yeah.
So all of those people who are like, oh, well, you can just download the music onto your Shuffle and then never connect your computer again. Like that's been the way for years, you know, that it's one of Apple's oldest things. So I'm really shocked that they didn't spend a couple days updating the software. I mean, the Nano looks like it's the iOS 6.
Not a single graphic artist was handed over that project.
I know.
Shadows, drop shadows. Oh my God.
It's so vibrant.
Textures, Andy.
It's like George W. Bush is president again. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this, and I was surprised that I thought that there was a really good, there was a reason for new iPods to exist in 2015 that weren't there in 2013 or 2014 even. One of them would be for, as Serenity said, a way for someone to have access to Apple Music without necessarily having a more expensive device, or more to the point, a lot of people use it to exercise and they don't necessarily want to have a phone-sized device strapped to their bicep. I know a lot of people that will buy like one of these $8 Alibaba cheap MP3 players because they just want something simple and light that isn't going to bog them down. But the other thing is that just a simple device, it is an iPod, but it has accelerometers and sensors so that it can feed information into HealthKit. Because you're gonna have your phone in your pocket most of the day, but if you really are concerned about health information, you can have this little $69 clip-on thing on your clothing literally all day long, and maybe you can even have it clipped onto whatever shirt you're wearing when you're sleeping, so it gets sleep data. And given how important a HealthKit is for so much of what Apple wants to do, not only financially but also in terms of what they think they should be doing to make the world a better place for people, that was just so obvious things for me. And so, yeah, I mean, like, just like Serenity, I was like shocked that they didn't bother to simply say, here is a way you can get Apple Music on an inexpensive device that's lightweight. I'm hoping that it's because they just wanted, for whatever reasons that nobody outside of Apple is going to be privy to, this was the right time to put these devices out there, and that there'll be a software update soon that will allow that. What I'm in fear of is that there was an actual meeting where an actual music company executive said, what's to stop somebody from paying for 1 month of Apple Music, then buying a $100 device, loading it with music, and then never changing that, and then carrying that device for the next 10 years? It'll be like stealing. It will be like stealing, but almost nobody will do it. And and you're being silly now. Here's a giant fish. I'm going to club you over the head with it now.
They managed to deal with this during the iPod era. I'm not entirely sure why this is suddenly a big deal again.
And Google Music allows you to stream wirelessly. Google Music allows you to do stuff like that. So it's not, I don't know. These are things that nobody outside of Apple will really know. I'm hoping there is an actual rational reason for it.
Does Google allow you to put your offline music on non-Google Play devices? Like, could you put it on an Alibaba MP3 player?
There aren't any, but it will allow you to stream wirelessly, which is not something that Apple Music allows you to do yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting product.
Hello?
Sorry, I thought I was interrupting somebody.
Oh.
I was going to say it's an interesting product because it's positioned at $200 on the entry level, which is half the price of an iPad mini. The iPod Air 2 is $500, and no contract iPhone 6 is $650. So it's got things like no Touch ID, and it's smaller in size. It maintained a 4-inch screen. And they did give it new colors. They did get rid of the wrist loop, but they didn't do anything to sort of make it a competitive flagship sort of product. It's now at the colorful bottom tier where the nanochromatic stuff used to be. And part of that is positioning, is protecting the devices that are higher on the map. And Apple's pretty careful about, we want to price this aggressively, but we don't want it to affect the overall pricing grid that we've established. And then when you get into things like Apple Music, I mean, they John Gruber posted this as well. They didn't, all the previous iPod software design guys are working on Apple Watch now. They didn't bring any back to update the iPod Nano interface. They didn't bring any engineers back to update FairPlay if they need to update it for Apple Music on these devices. Maybe they will. The biggest difference between original FairPlay and this is that FairPlay was still a purchase back then. So you were transferring material that you purchased and put it onto that device. Now it's a rental thing. And in music label minds, they're not even buying this music. It's rental music that they're going to put on this offline device that we can't check. And all of you are criminals and we hate you anyway. So there's a whole bunch of moving pieces here. And to me, it feels like the iPod as a whole is not something Apple wants to cancel yet, but it's making so little money for them that it's not something they want to put any more effort than absolutely necessary into at the moment.
That is weird that they take me the update to the iPod Touch, which is probably the most important of the three, because it's not just a contract free. Realize that this is a $200 version of a $600 phone. It just doesn't, as far as what most people are concerned about, it just doesn't have a phone radio and GPS. They want the apps, they want the services, but most of all, they want the games. And so they can actually sell it as a $200 gaming device, and that works well too. But I'm totally baffled as to what their meaning is. The Apple that I'm familiar with, which may not be in sync with the current Apple, is the company that would simply say, you know what, we're just going to cancel iPod. We're not even going to keep it on the price list for 2 years. We have no game plan for it. We don't think that this is going to be part of our future. We're just going to cancel it and let it die. The reason, if they're not only keeping it on the price list, but also making actual substantive improvements to it, in the case of the iPod Touch, there must be something that they're going to be talking about next year. And we're not talking about a super iPod Touch, but something that makes these devices a lot more relevant given the new service that they're going to be releasing next year, or the new set of APIs they're going to be releasing.
I think you're just giving them a lot of credit. I don't think.
Yeah, it's like what I was saying earlier. Apple does a really good job of indicating, here's the stuff we care about, here's the stuff we don't actually care about. And just like
all of a sudden they care about the iPod.
Well, no, they don't. I mean, like I said, if they did, they wouldn't simply say everyone who is they care about Apple Watch, so they move all their personnel off of the iPods and onto the Apple Watch. When it comes time to put out a new iPod, do they bring people in to actually give it some love? No, they don't particularly care about it. You feel like if Apple had like a island of misfit toys, there's a lagoon in the new campus. There'd be an island that has iPod, iCloud services. And decent quality headphones.
Well, it didn't get an event. It was not given time at WWDC. It wasn't waited until September.
Yeah. But still, they're making them.
Same was true of the Retina iMac.
Somebody speculated they just have a lot of binned,
the 19-inch.
A binned low quality A8s that they couldn't sell because they don't. And so they just said, well, you know what? We should just update the iPod Touch and we can dump the old A8s.
My understanding is that they didn't have enough A8s last year to get it into the iPad Mini 3 because they were supply constrained. And now they have enough to put it in the iPod Touch. So if anything, on the verge of the A9, they now are in.
Well, it might also mean that they had A8. A lot of A8s that couldn't run at the clock speed that they needed to. And then
Well, I think the iPhone ate a ton of their A8 supply early fall last year.
Anyway, it's bizarre. Maybe it must have something to do with Apple Music, right?
Well, 64-bit, Leo, getting everything on 64-bit, and the Apple TV should have been, it will be hopefully soon, but getting everyone off of the A5, I think, is just a service to humanity at this point.
One more story, then we're going to get your picks of the week. I just want to, clarify that this story is BS, but it's something I know a little bit about. 82% of mobile podcast listening happens on iPhone, according to Clamor, mostly using Apple's podcast apps. That is not our number at all. Not even close. It's about double what our number is. So I just, I'm sure many of you saw this. And what is it? What do your numbers look like? I'm looking at Mac Break Weekly, which would presumably have the highest iTunes participation or iPhone participation of any. And it does indeed. Mostly it's a lot of iPhone, but it's nowhere near 82%. In fact, if you look at these other sources, including Unknown and the website, there are plenty of other ways, and it's certainly not only 18% of the total.
A lot of Macintosh. Where their data comes from, I think like their data heavily skews that way because of the source of that data. And that's again something I think they should always clarify.
Another one of those, yeah.
Well, data is. I worked in analytics for a long time, and when people talk about analytics or metrics, the data is worthless. People point to it and say, "This tells me that." No, it doesn't. You have no idea what that data means unless you have someone highly qualified to contextualize.
It is what it is. It's the interpretation that's the challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Although I will grant you that I think, and we certainly planned for that. It's part of the new web redesign that a lot more people are going to be listening on mobile going forward. But iTunes is still, believe it or not, iTunes is still a big part of our overall listenership.
It's a juggernaut.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Not what it used to be.
10 years of podcasting.
It used to be 90%. And now iTunes is on Macintosh 15%, and on Windows and unspecified another 11 or 12%. So it's less than half for sure. But that's Mac Break Weekly. Let's look at. I'm just curious what Twit this week in tech. It's a little more evenly distributed in This Week in Tech. So the Mac show, obviously, doing great. 20% of our downloads, we don't even know where they're listening. We don't know how they're doing it. It's magic. It's just magic. iPhone is 22.9% of all Twit downloads. That's a little more accurate. Still.
So to all of you in the Chinese Secret Service, hello.
Hello.
Mac break.
Hello. Hello. All right. Let's take a break and come back. We're going to talk your picks. I've missed them. In fact, I have to go back now and listen to all the old shows to find out what I should buy. I buy so many of your picks. But first, a word from Audible, lifesaver when you're traveling. Lisa listened to, what was it, four books on our trip in Audible. That's what is so great about Audible. All of a sudden, you're reading. You're listening to great books, literature, nonfiction, history. And more than 180,000 titles on Audible.com means you've got a choice. I downloaded, because they great courses are now on Audible. So I downloaded 3 college lectures on the Middle Ages that are great. A professor of history at William and Mary College. And since we were going through this land that was so heavily influenced by what happened in the Middle Ages, I was just having such a great time listening, because I like to hear about the history of the place as we travel through it. On a plane, look, the fastest way to get from point A to point B, Audible.com. I want you to go to audible.com/MacBreak right now, and you can get your first book free, the new Harper Lee, the sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird 50 years later, Go Set a Watchman. Sure, that's out. Who reads that? Did it say Reese Witherspoon? It did. Wow. Now I might have to listen to it. The latest Stephen King novel. If you haven't listened to The Girl on the Train yet, oh, is that great. There's so much stuff at audible.com. What are you listening to these days, Andy?
I've realized that Carl Reiner has written more books of like just old stories of being in show business that I did not own. And so I bought I Remember Me and I bought I Just Remembered. And the really cool thing is that like last month I got an Amazon Echo, and it's on my kitchen and my living room are separated by like one of those pass-throughs. And that's where I keep the Echo. And whenever I go into the kitchen to either cook dinner or clean or anything, I'll just say, Alexa, read my book. And it knows what the last Audible book was, and it picks up. Oh, sorry, Alexa, stop.
Sorry, stop. Oh, that's good to know. I didn't know I could just say read it, and it would give me what I just listened to.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great.
That's the fun thing of almost every single thing that has voice command. It's always like a combination of hello, action word, please read book, title of author.
Right.
And then like you start getting lazy, say, read my book work. Hey, read my book works.
That's nice. So what did you say you were reading? I forgot.
I'm sorry.
The Carl Reiner book. What was the name of it?
I Remember Me, and then the latest one is I Just Remembered, because he's a writer of the Dick Van Dyke show, just led from your show of shows, and worked with Mel Brooks, his partner there, and directed Steve Martin in 3 movies. He's one of these guys. He's in his 90s and still completely sharp.
Isn't that amazing?
So it's not only these great stories of show business and just witnessing and creating 40 or 50 or 60, 70 years of comedy, but also he's got this great voice for reading it, and he knows what the story is, and so he knows how to tell his own story.
I'm
not saying that Reese Witherspoon isn't doing a great job, but I'm saying that it's different.
You know, not every author should read their own, but Carl Reiner, come on. If they're a performer,
exactly.
I like it. You know, that's the I Just Remembered. Oh, look at him as a young man on the cover of that. Wow. We're listening to a little bit of this. Let's just turn me up here.
I carried in my duffel bag during my army stint in World War II.
You're right. I totally get it now.
Stuffed in its pocket, I found letters from Estelle, my newlywed wife, and V-mails from my brother Charlie, who wrote from the war zone in Germany. Also in the brown suede writing tablet was a poem.
All right, now I got to get all of the Carl Reiner books.
When I was cleaning up the breakfast dishes and making lunch today, now we're in this part of the story where he's talking about being in the Red Scare, an FBI man coming to his house while he was working for your show of shows. So it's like this, it's a great example of like if you're gonna listen to like one of the Game of Thrones books, that's like thousands and thousands of hours, and you've got to remember where you were. Books like this are great
because each
chapter is a different story, and it will make you late for your next train or bus or appointment because you just want to listen for 4 minutes more to find out exactly how he did get Shelley Winters to come back to the set and finish her scene.
A great pick. Thank you. Any of the Carl Reiner, 7 Carl Reiner books on audible.com. But that's what's great about audible.com. You can just get into something and dig deep. And I love it. And I want you to try it. One book free. Your first month's free. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. You cancel in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. But that book's yours forever. Don't worry. I know some of you are going to want to read the Steve Jobs bio or... I mean, there's so much. Or Becoming Steve Jobs, which is also an excellent book. It's all there. Audible.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
I have two. One that just came in today. Berkeley Breathed has resumed doing Bloom County, and he posted a Sunday Bloom County strip with the whole cast to his Facebook. And it's, I hope he does more, because this one shows that, okay, yes, he can, he has not forgotten how to draw the characters, and he's not forgotten the characters' voices. My primary pick, though, is X Screensaver, which is an oldie but a goodie. This package of just standardized Mac screensavers has been around for about a decade and a half already. But the thing is, it's modular, and the package, they keep adding on, every now and then, really good new screensavers get written, and they get become part of the distribution.
Oh, look.
And like that is just your screensaver, you know.
That's awesome.
That's what happens when so the latest pack, I had not downloaded the latest package about a year and a half, and there are at least two or three like really killer ones. The Walking Robots became one. There's one that's like a completely shaded and animated like train station flipboard that will have, if you just connect it to a text file, it will just simply animated flipboard text.
Ooh.
Of any piece of text that you choose to put in, and like, look how beautiful that is.
Neat. Oh, I'm gonna do that.
And if there's more than like one board worth, it will just keep updating the next line, so you can have, you know, all of Moby Dick, like one one status board at a time.
Now, when you run a screensaver, do you turn off the screen off function on your Mac, or what do you do?
You can set it up incorrectly so that you can tell it to please time out the screen before it actually
ever
kicks in.
Yeah.
But it's not hard to set up. I mean, I usually try to make sure the screen gets turned off, even if it's plugged into power after a certain amount of time. But this is more to remind me that if I'm like right now, I've got my other computer like right in front there, it's now on screensaver to tell me that I'm still alive, I'm still alert. You just have to jiggle the mouse, but realize that, you know, I'm not working anything right now. But if it's just, who doesn't want to see like cute plastic wind-up robots walking around everywhere?
Look at that.
it's like having a lava lamp, only it costs you like $1,300, and it also burns about $40 worth of electricity per month.
Where do we get this again?
You can go to jwz.org/xscreensaver. And it's right there. Also, he has a great blog. He owns a couple of
Jeremy Zawadny. Yeah, we love him. Yeah,
again, legendary developer. And right now, fans of his blog are really excited because he has.
Jamie Zawinski.
I didn't want to try it. I did not want. He's one of those guys that knows JWZ because I can pronounce that
right.
I found his blog when he was first like buying Club DNA and renovating it, and this incredible blog about how hellacious it was even in like 1990 to renovate, get permits for a rock club and upgrade the liquor license. And now he's starting up a whole new one because now he's bought like a second location to be a second pizza place. So now we get to see what is it like to create and renovate a property in the current San Francisco property market. And all he wants to do with it is sell pizza. So,
wow. Jamie Zawinski, jwz.org/xscreensaver.
And it's free, by the way.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Great pick. Screensavers are back, as you might have heard. Let's get Serenity Caldwell and her pick of the week. Serenity?
All right. My pick of the week is something that has been doggedly occupying my brain space for the last 48 hours. A couple of years ago, a little short history, a couple of years ago, there was this game called Super Stickman Golf.
Oh, yeah.
By Noodle Cake Studios. Mm-hmm. That completely destroyed the Macworld team's productivity for about two weeks. So we were nice. All like, yeah, we're just going to play Super Stickman Golf tournaments against each other. So Noodle Cake Studios has teamed up with a small company called Blood Irony Games to create this new shoot 'em up called Shooting Stars, where essentially you play a guy on a hoverboard with a cat that shoots lasers who has to defend the Earth from aliens. Thinly veiled, dressed up as celebrities. It is loud and very brightly colored, and there are all kinds of crazy power-ups, and it was very quickly addictingly hilarious. And it has daily runs, so you're constantly doing some, like, you don't have to complete the same run over and over, you know, Space Invader style. You're always doing something different. Your power-ups are always different. You've got crazy sheeps that fly up. You've got electricity. It's just, it's so silly. Daft Punk makes an appearance.
Nice. It's bonkers.
Fun. It's cute. It's very cute. I recommend playing it.
8-Bix back, baby. Where can we get that again?
You can get that at the App Store. I believe it's $2.
Oh, it's an App Store. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Nice.
iPhone and iPad. So much fun. Also, laser cats. How do you say no to laser cats?
Are the lasers on the cats?
The laser comes out of the cat's mouth.
OMG.
It's pretty fun.
Now, would you rather square off against a cat with organic integrated lasers or like Spider-Man with like mechanical assisted lasers that could be upgraded?
Well, I don't know. The cat in this game eats superfoods to upgrade his lasers. So are superfoods on the table? Because that would change my answer.
Like omega-3s or kale?
Oh, good question.
Because kale, there's a limit to how much kale you can eat. I mean, you'll put up with that for... I did buy a bunch, and half of it, the backyard critters, well, even they kind of didn't like it. They kind of said, where's the usual stuff, Andy? Where's... I might have a kale deficiency. I admit that I'm not typical.
Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
Awesome. Well, first, I did a quick look, Leo, to see what our stats were for the iMore show.
Yeah.
And it's 46% Apple Core Media, which I believe is the built-in podcast app, 20% for iTunes, 20% for Overcast, and
that's a big 5% percentage.
5% for Pocket Casts.
Overcast, huge.
I think some shows skew Overcasty.
Yeah.
That makes me sense.
Yeah, but see, right there. So even on a very much Apple-focused show, it's not even half iPhone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So my pick of the week is Apple Camp, and it's something that Apple does. It's done it for a few years, but it's not that widely known. And what it is every summer, you can go and sign up your kids for a little camp-like activity that takes place at Apple retail stores. You just go to apple.com/retail. They have sign up there, and they have two different tracks. The first is how to use iMovie and GarageBand to sort of make your own little summer movie project. And the other one is how to make a book, like a digital book that you can put all your photos in. And they have... The one I went to yesterday and today was packed. They had, I think, 8 or 10 children. They had 4 or 5 Apple employees with them. They showed them how to sort of storyboard everything, how to convert that into shots with your camera, which could be an iPod Touch or an iPad, how to load that into iMovie on the Mac, how to add a soundtrack with GarageBand. There was a lot of attention given to the kids. They all got their own little Apple Camp t-shirts, badges with their names on. They had computers set aside for them. And it was really cool because it's absolutely free. All you have to do is sign up for it. And it teaches them really basic skills. And it's not the same thing as the workshops they do for adults, obviously. But it lets them maybe start using software or get a hobby that they wouldn't have thought of otherwise. And I've heard from people before whose kids got interested in Hour of Code or one of the other workshops they've done that they've actually pursued them as interests. So if you have an Apple store near you, they've got sessions this week, next week, I believe for the next 3 or 4 weeks, you can just sign up, bring your child in, and they take care of everything. It's a phenomenal service.
Nice. At your Apple store, at an Apple store near you.
They do field trips, too. If you want to sign up your school and you bring them there, they'll do field trips for the entire class. That's they do all cool. sorts of amazing workshops there.
That's neat.
It's well worth looking into.
Yeah. All right. Folks, it's been fun. I don't have a pick. I was busy floating down the river.
That Sony camera, though.
Your pick was vacation.
Yeah, I got a lot of use out of Hyperlapse. I really enjoy Hyperlapse a lot. That's a great program.
And Lederhosen.
I do pick Lederhosen for those who are man enough to show their knees. Or woman enough. I don't think women wear Lederhosen. They wear dirndls. We got a dirndl for Lisa. Serenity Caldwell, you could actually, as part of your roller derby persona, wear Lederhosen. I think that would be really cool.
I could. It doesn't quite fit my roller derby name, but it's a nice idea.
You could have a second persona. Well, people must do that, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Someone's name could be Haterhosen.
Haterhosen.
Leo, we can get you skating on the Massachusetts team. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's a co-ed team?
There's a men's team that I coach.
Oh.
That I help coach.
Oh, man.
called the Mass Maelstrom. We could, Leo, we could get you on, or Leo, we could get you on that.
Do you yell at them?
Andy,
do you
say, we could get you on that.
Man up, get out there. You've got to jam.
Yeah. There is a great picture of me scolding one of our smallest blockers saying, I'm sorry, you have to jam in the next one.
No,
sorry.
I don't want to do it. Read Serenity at imore.com. She's Setern, S-E-T-T-E-R-N on the Twitter. And thank you for those great tutorials, the ones you just did on the air with me and the ones I will be reading as soon as we get off the air.
You got it, Leo.
imore.com. Speaking of iMore, Mr. Editor-in-Chief of iMore, Mr. Rene Ritchie, thank you for being here, and thanks for filling in and hosting the show.
It's an absolute honor, Leo. Thank you so much.
Was it fun?
It was so fun, and you can't ask for a better panel than we got.
All I got was tweets from people saying, don't come back. So I think it went well.
That's not the ones I got.
Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, thank you, too, for filling in. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it's like Renee said, it's one of the rare opportunities where say if we got two seats full, if I ask her and her to join us, it'll be a great show. And pretty much all I got to do is smile, nod, and introduce the commercials.
Yeah, that's how I try to do it too. Actually, you got some new people on who people were very complimentary.
Yeah, we'll get them back. Excited too. Yeah, both of us got some. We both had wish lists, and we're both fortunate enough that the people that we wanted to come in were said yes.
Nice to get some fresh blood and
absolutely
send us the contact stuff because we'll get them both back or all of them back.
That's great.
We do a Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. We had a nice live audience today. We always welcome you to visit the studio. Just email us ahead of time so we can put a seat out for you. Tickets at twit.tv. Of course, you can also watch and participate in the chat room. It's practically being here. And if none of that works for you, like maybe you got a job or something, don't worry about it. We have on-demand audio and video available at twit.tv/mbw or use your iPhone's podcast app and Prove Me Wrong or whatever app you want to. That's fine. I'm not saying don't. I think it's a great idea. But do come back every Tuesday. In fact, subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. Now, my friends, it's time to get back to work because you know what? Break time is over. Bye-bye.